Welcome to Gemara Markings. Chiyur is Bova Kamo Daf Tzadi Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's Chiyur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to Option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 12 lines from the top of Daf Tzadi Tes. You will notice in the middle of the line one of our geometric forms, an inverted crown shape. We find ourselves in the middle of a discussion, having started in our previous discussion with the law of Rav Asi. Rav Asi stated that an umon and craftsman kine b'shvach kli, through the improvement that he makes in creating a vessel, he thereby acquires it, so that even if he were given raw materials from which to construct a vessel, the construction of the vessel enables the craftsman who fashioned it to be considered the legal owner of it. We're now going to bring that point into question with the following source. Toshma, hanoisein talisoi l'umon, a customer gives his garment to a craftsman, a professional. An umon is a person who has a special trade. Gomroi v'hoidioi, if he completes the task and then informs the owner, I finished the job. Afilu mikan ve'ad asor yomim eino over olav mishum loy solin. Even over the span of 10 days, if the owner hasn't come to pick it up and pay, he is not considered in violation of the Torah prohibition of delaying the payment to a worker. Loy solin is the pasuk. Loy solin pula sochir. Do not delay. We're paraphrasing. It's not a literal translation of the pasuk, but the prohibition of delaying payment of a worker doesn't apply. However, nosno lo b'chatzi hayom, if the craftsman gave the article to the customer, the finished job at midday, kevan shishoka olav hachamo, once the sun sets and he hasn't been paid yet, over olav mishum bal tolin, the customer is in violation of lo solin, of delaying payment. If one were to accept the principle of Rav Asi, that a craftsman acquires the vessel as his own through the improvements that he made in it, Amai over Mishum Bal Tolin, why would you think to apply the prohibition of Lo Solin? The prohibition of Lo Solin is a prohibition that applies to workers, hired workers. But in the case of a sale, if you say that the craftsman acquired the vessel and he then gives the vessel to the customer, that doesn't come under the issue or the prohibition of Lo Solin, which is a worker employer based law. Here you're not dealing with a worker employer situation if you say umon kene b'shvach kli, but rather you're dealing with a sale of an item. And regarding purchases and sales of items, the Esor, the prohibition of Lo Solin, is inapplicable. Omar Rav Mori Brei Durav Kahana. So Rav Mori explains the reason that there's Lo Solin over here, the prohibition of delaying wages, applies Begarda the Sarbala the Leka Shvacha. The craftsman involved here is a garda de sarbala. He's someone that is given garments to soften them. That's Rashi gives you a French word for what a garda de sarbala is, but for our purposes, the idea is a person who's hired to soften garments. That's the Uman that was featured in the Tanaic source that we saw in the frame just a couple lines up. And what's unique about this? The Lekha Shvacha, there's no, literally, the translation would be, there's no improvement. Well, the Gemara asks, what do you mean there's no improvement? So, self lama yoava nihale, why did you give the item, the article of clothing, to the Garda, the Sarbala, in the first place? Lirikuchi, to soften it. Kevan derakhe, hainu shvacha. The now softened garment is the improvement. So, you see from here, someone who is a craftsman, a professional, who's hired to improve it, is under the rules of Lo Sullen, which would once again reinstate the question on Ravasi. Here you have an improvement that's instilled in the garment, the softened garment, and we don't seem to view it as Uman Kayme B'Shvach Kli by the fact that the Tanaic source says there's an Isur, there's a prohibition, a violation of Lo Sullen. Lo Sricha, no. Rather, the source is needed to tell us about of the law of Lo Sullen, but it's not a kasha, not a difficulty for Ravasi. The Agre Levichi, Bicha B'Moasa, the Hainu Schirus. The Uman is the guard of the Sarbala that we described before, but he's hired and paid per action. Bicha is the action, the softening action that's done by the Uman, by this particular guard of the Sarbala. His pay for is a moah. Moah is a type of coin. So he gets per bicha, per action, per softening action, he gets paid the moah. And now that is a employer-employee relationship that we call in Hebrew schirus. He's a hired hand for that, and not a craftsman that's given an item or given raw materials from which to create a vessel, but rather he's a hired hand paid. Usually we think in terms of paid on an hourly or a daily basis. Here he's paid on a per action basis. Therefore, you do have the prohibition of Baal Tolin, of not delaying the wages. But if you were dealing with an Uman, a craftsman that's paid for the job, not on a per hour, per diem basis or per action basis, but paid for the job, there would be no violation of Baal Tolin because of what Ravasi said, Uman Kaina B'Shvach Kli. The Gemara proceeds with an analysis that you don't find often in the Gemara, you find it more in commentaries, but here the Gemara asks a question according to what we were originally thinking, what we call the Havamina. According to what we thought originally, that he wasn't hired per bicha, per action, but rather he was hired to do the job. He was hired to be paid for the job. And at that point, we were willing to live with the idea that there's an Isur Baal Tolin, that there is a prohibition of Baal Tolin. Well, that thinking, Messiah Leila Rav Sheshes, that would support Rav Sheshes. The Bo Minei Rav Sheshes, the question was once asked of Rav Sheshes, Kablonus, over Olav Mishum Baal Tolin, or Eino Over. Kablonus is a term that we'll use in contradistinction to Schirus that we mentioned before. Here, the wages or the payment is in terms of pay for the job, hired to do a job and paid for the final product, not on a per hour basis. What is the the position of Baal Tolin in such a relationship? Is there a violation of Baal Tolin in a case like that where when the job is finished, and you and you take possession of the item, are you obligated? Are you obligated to pay before the end of the day, which is what the essence of Baal Tolin is? Without getting into details, the Gemara in Bava Metzia deals with greater detail, but that's the spirit of Baal Tolin, is to pay before day's end. So, is there by Kablonis Baal Tolin, and the Omar Luhu Rav Sheshes over, and Rav Sheshes says yes. So the Havamina, the thinking that we had before, that the Uman in the source featured above was in fact a person that we would call Kablon, as opposed to a Sochir. He was hired to do a job and to be paid for the entire job. Is the Iser Baal Tolin applicable? And Rav Sheshes says yes. So that that the analysis we had of the Tanaic source above would appear to support then Rav Sheshes. Lema de Rav Sheshes pligo ader vasi. Should we say then that Rav Sheshes, who says that Kablonus is given to the Isur of Baal Tolin, is at odds with Rav Asi? Because we saw before, according to Rav Asi, a Kablon, person hired to do the job, paid for the job, acquires the vessel, and in acquiring the vessel, there is no Baal Tolin. It's viewed then as simply as a sale, which has no relevance to the din of Baal Tolin. The Pasuk itself says, Lo solen pula sochi, do not delay the payment of the hired hand. Not delay payment in the case of a sale. So should we say that Rav Sheshes, who says that Baal Tolin is applicable to Kablonus, is then at odds with Rav Asi, who says, Uman kene b'shvach kli? Omar Shmuel Bar Acha. Shmuel Bar Acha says, no, they're not at odds with one another. That which we said before, that Baal Tolin would be Shaykh, would be applicable to Kablonus, like Rav Sheshes said, B'shlicha de'igrasa. He's hired to serve as a, there was a term that might be familiar to many, a mailman, someone who's hired to deliver letters. He's hired and paid for the job of delivering the letter. He's not paid on an hourly basis, not on a daily basis, but he's paid for the job. I said mailman before simply for translation purposes, not to serve as an example of how a person is paid. Of course, a mailman probably receives a salary that's more characteristic of schirus. But for our purposes, it's a person hired to do the job. There are companies that, as this recording is being made, will be hired to hire certain companies like UPS. That's the name of a company that, at least at the time of this recording, is a company that's hired to deliver packages, and they'll probably deliver letters also. So they're paid by the job, not by the hour. The individual worker might be paid that way, but we're looking right now at the company, how payment works. So in this case, the individual that was hired above in the Tanaic source was hired to be paid by the job. However, there's no improvement in the vessel, in this case the letter, so that Rav Asi's din of Uman Kaina B'Shvach Kli is only where the person is hired to do the job is also in the course of the job improving the vessel, creating a new vessel from raw material or making a significant improvement, but in the vessel itself. But a person hired to deliver a letter, true, he's hired to do the job, and with regard to that, Rav Sheshes will tell you there is Baal Tolin. But if a person was hired to do a job that would have resulted in the improvement of the vessel, then Rav Sheshes might very well agree with Rav Asi that Uman Kine B'Shvach Kli, and in that case there would be no Baal Tolin, because then it becomes a situation of a purchase and a sale. we raise a question. It's a long question. Leimo ketanoi. Shall we say that the issue of uman kene b'shvach kli is a machlokas tanoim? It will be a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chaman that we'll see in the following source. Just a word about structure. We have this suggestion, or raising the possibility that issue of uman kene b'shvach kli is a machlokas tanoim, and that takes you to the end of the long question marking. All of this is presented as the first approach in analyzing these two opinions, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. The triangles that will appear in the course of this discussion are featured on the side of the Gemara under the heading Mivneh, where a triangle appears. These are four nisyonas, four attempts, lahasbir, machlokes hatanoim, to explain the Tanaic disagreement. Bamokur shel ase li shirayim, or shirim. A person brings some gold to a craftsman and says, "Please fashion from this raw material, some jewelry." Shirim, nizomim, tabos. We'll see in the source are different kinds of jewelry. Lefini soyan arishon. According to the first approach, yotze shadina shiravasi uman kena b'shvach kli avi machlokes tanoim. According to the first approach in analyzing the Tanaic source, the result of the analysis will be that Rav Asi's din, Rav Asi's rule, that uman kene b'shvach kli, that a craftsman is said to acquire the vessel that he fashioned, is a Tanaic disagreement. Now, the Gemara. Lema ketanoi. Asei li shirim nizomim v'tabois v'akadei shloch. A woman says to a craftsman, fashion for me these different kinds of jewelry, shirim, nizomim, v'tabos. There's no pressing need to translate each one literally, but they represent different kinds of jewelry. Fashion for me from this material that I'm giving you. So she gives to the craftsman some gold from which to fashion this jewelry, and she says, "Va'kadei shloch," and I will be married to you through the wages, the money, the fee that I owe you. In exchange for the fee that I owe you, I will be married to you. That's the simple translation of what the woman presents to the craftsman, this arrangement or this deal. Make for me from this raw material the jewelry, and instead of my paying you at the end, I agree to be married to you. Kevon Sha'ason, once he fashions them, Mekudeshes, she is thereby married to this man. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Meir's approach. Once again, we're presenting this on a literal basis. We have to do that in order for the Gemara to be able to interpret. We need to have flexibility as the sugya unfolds. So in the meantime, we're giving you a literal translation. So that if you have any questions at this point, my suggestion is hold off until the Gemara analyzes. The Chachamim omrim eino mekudeshes ad sheyegia mamon liyoda. The Chachamim say she's not married until the mamon, the article comes to the article, the item. The mamon usually is the money, until the money comes to her hand. My mamon. What do the Chachamim mean when they say that she's not married until the mamon comes to her hands? E lema oisai mamon. If you are to think that it's a reference to the medal that she gave to him, that she's not married until the mamon comes back to her hands. Michlad Rabbi Meir Savar Oiso Mamon Lo El B'mai Mikdasha. That we would then be left to thinking that Rabbi Meir says that even without the medal coming back to her hands, she would nevertheless be married. Well, with what is she getting married? What's she getting? El Pshita Mai Mamon Mamon Achir. The Chachamim that made reference to Mamon means some other Mamon, some other item of value, not just the finished product. According to Rabbi Meir, by simply receiving the finished product, which is the metal now fashioned into something beautiful, something useful, that is the means of, that's the marriage money that a woman is supposed, is expected to receive. It's enough that she gets back the finished product of the material that he, that she had given him in the first place. According to the Chachamim, you need to have Momon Acher. It's not enough that he, the artisan, gives her the finished product. He has to give her something else. Visavruha. And in this analysis, we are making the following assumptions. Dekule Alma, all the Tanoim, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim agree, Yeshno L'Schirus Mitchila V'Yatsof, that when you calculate wages, when you analyze how wage payment is made, the, we'll say, the clock starts ticking from the very beginning. Mitchila, from the very moment the hired hand starts working, he is accumulating his wages. How much is the first second of work worth? It's worth a fragment of any unit of currency, but it starts accumulating from the beginning. That's a famous term, yeshno l'schirus mitchila v'yatsof, that work is started, the debt to the worker starts accruing from the very beginning. If we look at Rashi together, yeshno l'schirus mitchila v'yatsof, kevon sha'ola schoroi l'pruto nischaivo lo miyad pruto. We mentioned that his efforts start yielding income for him from the first second of work. Well, the first second of work has a negligible value to it, but after maybe after 35 seconds of work, he's done enough that would warrant paying him a pruta. Pruta is the minimum form of currency that the Shas makes reference to, the minimum amount of money. So once his efforts add up to a pruta of worth of value, she becomes indebted to him. V'havya le milve gabo, and it's as if she has a loan that she received. There's a debt that's created. A debt means that she owes money, like a lender, like a borrower owes a lender. That's a milve. V'havya le milve gabo v'i lav de umon kene b'shvach kli. This is what the Gemara will say in a couple of lines. But if not for the fact, according to Rabbi Meir, that the uman, that the craftsman, the fellow hired to fashion the jewelry, if not for the fact that he is set to acquire the vessel, mishum schirus lo lemo Rabbi Meir de tiskadesh, because of the fee owed to him, Rabbi Meir would not say that in exchange for the fee that she would be married. In lieu of her paying him the fee, that would constitute marriage. He would never say that. Damakalish b'milveh eina mekudeshes, a man who tries to marry a woman in exchange for relieving her of a debt that she owed him would not result in marriage. Why not? The milve loitzonitna, money given to a borrower, in this case money that a lender man gave to a borrowing woman, money received as a loan is assumed to be spent immediately. In other words, there's an option on the part of the borrower to spend the money immediately. V'eino b'ein, and it's not around at the time that the man proposes to the woman, be married for me in exchange for the loan. You're at that moment in time, you're not giving her anything. You're relieving her of the obligation to pay back the debt, but you're not giving her something which is an essential element in marriage. That when you are proposing marriage to a woman, you have to give her something in exchange for which she agrees to give herself over to you. But relieving the woman of a loan, you're not giving her anything at that point. Elo, so why would Rabbi Meir say that the woman will be married in exchange for the vessel that she ordered to be made with her own materials. What's she getting? It must be then that Rabbi Meir holds Uman Kaina Bishvach Kli, that the Uman, the craftsman, actually acquired the newly created vessel through the improvements that he made in the raw material. When he gives her the jewelry that she ordered to be made, Mikatsha Bishvacha Madi'is Le Begave. She is being married in exchange for the improvement that she is receiving that was made in the material that she had given him. Afalpi Shelo Nosan Lo Momon Achir, even though the craftsman is not giving her something additional. He's giving her basically the metal that she gave him. He is giving back to her in exchange form. That results in marriage, according to Rabbi Meir. Therefore, how do we explain? What is she getting? She's getting the vessel that we say the worker has said to have acquired. So the worker is, in effect, giving her something of his. He's giving her something tangible at the time of the marriage. At the time of the marriage proposal. For Rabbanan Savri Lo Koni, the Rabbanan in the source had said that she's not married unless that craftsman gives her something additional. They hold Lo Koni, Ve'ena Mekudeshes Ad She'agia Momon Achir Li'yoda. And she would not be considered married until something else is given to her. Something else, something additional, is given to her. So now we go back to the Gemara, and we saw the assumptions that the Gemara is making before it comes to this conclusion. The first assumption was that Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim view payments made to a worker as yeshno l'schus mitchila v'yatsof. And as Rashi said, by viewing the payment as accruing from the very beginning, the marriage cannot be established through the worker relieving her of the need to pay him for his services, because that wage, that payment, is viewed as a loan, and a loan is not the relief of a loan is not the an acceptable means of establishing marriage. You're relieving her, true, but you're not giving her anything. Udekuli alma hamekadesh b'milva eino mekudeshes. And the second assumption is, once we've established that yeshna l'schus mitchila sof, and we describe that as essentially a loan that is formed, we're also making the assumption that everyone agrees, Rabbi Meir and Lachomim agree, that a man who tries to marry a woman in exchange for exempting her or relieving her of the debt that she owed him does not result in marriage. Well, with all that having been said, how can Rabbi Meir say that she is married? My love, but Uman Kene B'Shvach Kli Komifligi. Once we've established in points 1 and 2, or I should say points Aleph and Beis in our markings, points Aleph and Beis were points that there was unanimous thought, there was total agreement on them, so where's the point of disagreement? So is it not regarding the analysis of Uman Kene B'Shvach Kli? The Rabbi Meir, Savar Rabbi Meir, said that by the artisan giving the woman the finished product, the jewelry, she is thereby married without the need of offering her anything additional. Rabbi Meir holds Uman Kene B'Shvach Kli, that the artisan is said to have acquired the vessel for himself. And therefore, when he offers it to her, he's giving her, the woman, at the time of the marriage proposal, something of his to her. And that's the way marriage is accomplished. The Rabbanon Savri ain't Uman Kene B'Shvach Kli, and the Rabbanon say, no, he doesn't acquire it through the improvement. So if he's going to rely on his giving her the finished product, he's simply giving her back that which was hers to begin with, namely the metal. So the Rabbanon say that she's not going to be married until the artisan gives her something additional. So what do we see? We see that the issue of Uman Kene B'Shvach Kli, does the craftsman acquire the vessel through the improvements he created, is a machlokes tanoim, a tanaic disagreement, only Rabbi Meir holding thusly. Lo, the Gemara says that's not the analysis. The Kuli Alma, Rabbi Meir and the Chumam will both hold ein uman kine b'shvach kli. The artisan does not acquire the vessel through the improvements that he created. Ela ha'cha b'yeshlo l'schirus m'tchilu v'yatzof komifli. Here, the machlokas surrounds the issue of how do we view wages and their accrual from the beginning of the work. Rabbi Meir sofer ein l'schirus ela l'besof. Payment to a worker is not an accrued debt. Payment to a worker arises as a, we'll say, as a need to be paid only at the very end. And at that moment, in our case above, the worker, the artisan, is saying, be married to me. So that he, when he finishes the item, gives her the jewelry, at that point, the debt to him is said to arise. That's and at that moment he's saying, in exchange for the debt that only now arises, be married to me. That is not a loan that has been relieved. A loan that has been relieved is a pre-existing debt that she had upon her. That's not the case. If you say ein l'schirus ela l'besof, that payment for the job done arises only at the very end. For Rabbanan Savri, yesh l'schirus mitchila v'yatzof. The Rabbanan who say that the return of the item is not enough to establish the marriage. Why? Because that would have been marriage in exchange for the relief of the fee owed him. And the fee owed him, according to the Rabbanan, is something that is tantamount to a debt that had accrued over time. That's called yesh l'schirus mitchila v'yatzof. So that's their point of disagreement. How do we view the debt or the fee owed to the worker upon the completion of the job? Is it something that is a debt that is created only at the very end, or something that accrued over time? The Rabbonin and Rabbi Meir will agree that the fee owed to the worker is something that actually accrues over time, and therefore we can view it as a debt. And here the analysis, we're at the third stage of analysis of what is the point of disagreement, is Mekadesh b'milva. Can a woman be married through the relief of a debt? Is that considered sufficient for establishing marriage? There would be mayor Savar Mekadesh b'milva mikudeshes, that one who had a woman who had a debt owed to a lender, and the lender decides to relieve her of the debt in exchange for agreeing to marry him, that's considered kiddushin, that's considered sufficient for establishing a marriage. For Rabbanan Savri HaMekadesh B'milva Eino HaMekudeshes, and the Rabbanan in the source above who said that she's not married simply by her receiving the finished vessel until the artisan gives her something additional, the simple relief of the fee is not a means of marriage, because Mekadesh Milva, one who tries to marry a woman through the relief of a debt, that does not constitute marriage. Number four, we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Rava Omar de Kule Alma. Notice there are three assumptions that Rava is going to make before he presents his analysis of the Tanaic disagreement. So, Aleph. The Kulei Alma, yesh no l'schirus mitchila v'yatzof. Rabbi Meir and the Chumam both agree that the fee is said to have accrued from the very beginning. The Kulei Alma, hamekadesh b'milva eino mikudeshes, and they both agree that marrying a woman through the relief of her debt does not constitute marriage. The Kulei Alma, ein uman kaimeh b'shvach kli. And they all agree that the artisan is not said to acquire the vessel that he improved. Well, once you make all of these assumptions, what possibility is there in saying that the woman would be married? Focusing on Rabbi Meir for the moment, what's she getting? The relief of the debt wouldn't be grounds for marriage. The Uman is not giving her anything that he acquired simply by his making by forming the jewelry. So what is she getting? What are we dealing with over here in the Machlokis, Rabbi Meir and the Chomim in the Tanaic source we saw before? He fashioned a vessel from the raw material, from the metal that she gave him. He, the artisan, added something of his own that she did not give him. That's nofach mishalo, something of his own. Maybe a little extra a stone that he added, or some other decorative item that he attached to the jewelry that he made. But he's adding something of his own. And then he gives that finished product to the woman. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that it's enough that he returns to her the finished item with this little addition. It's a negligible type addition. Rabbi Meir Sovar, that it works. That works. Why? Milve upruta daita apruta. When you have these two phenomena coming together, relief of a debt, and at the same time, we'll call the lender, who in this case is the artisan, adds pruta. Pruta, we explained before, as being the minimum form of currency. So when the woman receives the item, the finished product, which represents the loan, it represents, we'll say, the relief of the need to pay. After all, he's saying, in exchange for this, be married to me. So he's relieving her of the fee. And at the same time, he's also adding this negligible addition, the pruta. Daita pruta, her mind is on that little addition. So the woman who's agreeing to be married is agreeing to be married in exchange for the pruta that she's receiving. And we know, according to Beis Hillel, that a woman is married in exchange for even that minimal amount of currency. So mindset wise, her mind is on the pruta. Verabona savri milve pruta daita milve. In a scenario like that, where a woman is being relieved of the debt to the artisan, even though he's adding a little something of his own, her mind isn't on that little addition. And therefore, she's not going to be married until he offers her something else besides this nofach mishalo. Ubet plukta dehani tanoi. The issue that we just mentioned, milvo pruta, is the subject of a machlokes tanoim that we will see. Notice we have a long point marking. What the Gemara will do is present a Tanaic source. Within the Tanaic source, there are three tanoim that appear. After the framed section, the Gemara will then be analyzing what is the point of difference between the respective tanoim in the source. And in the course of that analysis, you will see that the points that Rava made are points that are the subject of Tanaic controversy. We have a subtopic heading which appears in the margin. We've already presented the issue, but we'll look at our subtopic heading just for a review of what we've already said. In the margin, the Tatnose subtopic, Milve Pruta, Idaita Pruta, when you have the relief of a debt plus the presentation of an additional Pruta, is the woman's mind on the Pruta? Lefi hezberu shel Rava hamokar shel aseli shirim, according to Rava, the Tanaic source that we saw in Amud Aleph, where the woman ordered jewelry to be made, medubar shuman hoisif noifach mashu katan mishalo, the craftsman added a little something of his own. Fatanoim cholkim bekach im shuman machzul lo sakli im toisef esu im daito aleo oy loik, and the machlokes Rebbe and the Chumim focused on the woman's mindset. What is she focused on that little addition, or on the relief, the exemption from needing to pay him for his craftsmanship? Now, as we said, this issue will turn out to be a machlokes tanoim in the following source. So as far as Rava is concerned, Milver Bruta Daita al Milver Daita Bruta is already a machlokis, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. That machlokis will appear in this source as well. But as we said before, you have to wait for the Gemara analysis that follows. The source says, Bishar Desanya, Bishar Shosisi Moch, Eino Mekudeshes. If a woman says to a craftsman, a craftsman says to a woman, be married to me in exchange for being relieved from your obligation to pay me for the services that I rendered. Note the past tense element. I'll read again. Bishar shosisi means the wages that you owed me for that which I have done. Be married to me in exchange for being relieved of that debt. She's not married. That's an attempt to marry her through a milveh, through a debt, the relief of a debt. However, bischar she'ese moch mekudeshes, if the worker says before he does the job, be married to me in exchange for the relief of the fee that you'll be obligated for the work that I will do for you, she is married. In other words, that will work. That when he finishes the job and relieves her of the debt, of the way, the need to pay for the services, that works. We'll see later in the Gemara that is a function of viewing wages as not something that accrues over time, but rather is something that arises only at the very end, so that you're not looking at it as a debt, as a loan. Rabbi Nosson Omer, Rabbi Nosson disagrees with this, and he says, "Bischar she'ese imoch eino mekudeshes, v'kol shekein bischar shosis imoch." Rabbi Nosson says, even in presenting it in the future tense, namely, in exchange for the fees that will be due to me when I finish the job in the future, be married to me, that does not work. And all the more so if he says, be married to me in exchange for exemption of a debt that you have already owed me. That's a straightforward milveh. But even in Bishar She'eseh Moch, Rabbi Nosson says it does not work, because he looks at fees as wage fees being something that accrues from the very beginning. That's Yeshna v'schirus mitchilo v'yatsov. And each accrued pruta of work is like a separate, like a debt, like a loan that she owes from the beginning. And that is therefore ineffective. Rabbi Yudah Nasi says, Bain bischar she'asisi moch, bain bischar she'esi moch, eina mekudeshes. That is similar to Rabbi Nosson, whether it be the past tense, the debt that you already owed me, or the debt that you will owe me, neither exemption therefrom will result in marriage. Fim hoisif lo noifach mishalom mekudeshes. If, however, this hired hand hired to produce something, and he adds a little something of his own, when the item is given to the woman in exchange for her marriage, that will work. Rabbi Nosson, who preceded in this source, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, will not agree with that. So that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi represents the opinion of Milve Upruta Daito Apruta. Her mind is on that little addition. Rabbi Nosson, who says no, because her mind is on the debt from which she's being relieved. Now the Gemara spells out what we have done along the way. Bein Tanakama Rabbi Nosson Iko Binayu, as far as a point of difference between the first opinion and that of Rabbi Nosson, Schirus, how to analyze a debt for work that will be done. Do we say that the wages are set to be set to accrue from the very beginning, and hence it's viewed as a milve, which is Rabbi Nosson's approach? Or do you say that no, it's not something viewed as being accrued from the very beginning, but rather it's an amount of money that needs to be paid that is realized only at the very end of the job? That would be the opinion of the Tanakama, the first Tanaic authority here. Bein Rabbi Nosson Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi Iko Binayu Milve Upruta. The point of difference between Rabbi Nosson and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is with regard to the artisan adding a little something of his own. What is the woman's mind on when she receives the finished product with that little addition? According to Rabbi Nosson, her mind is on the relief of the fee, not on that little addition. So she is only being married through the relief from the in exchange for the exemption of a debt which doesn't work. And Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says, no, her mind is on that little addition. So at the time she's receiving the finished product, she's actually getting something that wasn't hers beforehand. And of course, and that's why she will be married. As you can see, we have a slash mark indicating that which follows is a new trend of thought. Before continuing with the Gemara, we glance at the side in our margin under the No Say, the topic heading, which reads, Taboch Umon Shekilkel. A taboch is a slaughterer of animals, and in this case we're talking about a professional taboch that kilkel, that ruined the shechita, the slaughtering. Haim hu chayav. Is he obligated to compensate for the loss that he caused? Haim yesh chiluk im hu mekabel schar oiloi. Do we make a distinction between cases where the slaughterer, the professional slaughterer, is being paid for his services or not? The Gemara. Omar Shmuel. Taboch uman shekilkel. Oh, we should point out, by the way, that we have a house marking, and we indicate under our Mivneh heading, Memros b'inyan taboch uman shekilkel. So we have here Shmuel commenting on the taboch uman shekilkel, and later you'll see Rabbi Yochanan commenting on taboch uman shekilkel. So now, Shmuel says a slaughterer that ruined the job, he's supposed to slaughter a kosher slaughtering, but it resulted in it being a nevela. He ruined the job. Chayav l'shalem, he has to compensate the owner for the loss. And we can add, and all the more so, if you were dealing with a commoner, not a non-professional, he shouldn't have slaughtered in the first place. But here we're dealing with even a professional that messed up. He has to compensate. Mazikhu posheahu. Shmuel uses a double expression. He's called a mazik, one who damages, and also negligent. Nasek oimelo shchait li mikan v'shochat lo mikan. It's as if he received instructions to slaughter from this side, and he didn't listen and rather slaughtered from the other side. Loma leila meimar, why is it necessary for Shmuel to describe this as mazikhu poshehu? Both a destructive act and also negligent. E. Omar mazikhu, had Shmuel simply used the term he is a mazik, have amino, I would have thought, hani mili, hecho de ka'ovid bischar, I would have thought that that is the case when he is doing his job for pay. Aval hecho de ka'ovid bechinam, lo. But if he were doing it gratis, he would not be obligated to compensate. Komash malon posheahu. Shmuel informs us that even if he was doing it for free, he would be obligated to compensate. Posheahu. He is considered having done something out of negligence. Let us take a look at the Rashi. Dekaovid bischar, the Rashi that we'll look at together, you'll see is a number of lines up in the narrow lines of Rashi. Dekaovid bischar, de mazik chayov ba'oinsin. A person who causes damage is obligated even when the damage he caused was something that was beyond his control. The Oda Muad Le'olam, Bein Shoyeg, Bein Mezid. A person, a human being, is considered Muad. Muad is a term that we find by an animal that's gored three times. It shows a certain proclivity toward destruction. A person is said to be Muad, which I must emphasize results in full payment for damages, whether he did the damage unintentionally or with intention. Midikori le mazik l'chayva ba'oinis, from the fact that Shmuel is referring to him the term mazik, to obligate him even in a case of ones where it was beyond his control, certainly unintentional. Shma mina ba'oisa b'schar komar, that would indicate that you're dealing with someone that was being paid. The komashamon de poshehu, and he adds that he's poshea de lo choshiv le oines elapshia, that the ruination of the slaughtering isn't considered an act of something beyond his control, but rather it's an act of negligence. The have le lemirme anafshe, he, the slaughterer, should have considered shema tefarchi sabeim of izorba, that the animal might jump. Tfarchis is a sudden abrupt movement, which would ruin, of course, a kosher form of slaughtering. So the slaughterer should have considered that, and by not considering that might happen, not taking necessary precautions, he is considered have acting out of negligence. And that tells us that even if he was a professional, but he was doing it for free, he still has to compensate. Eisvei, we continue in the Gemara. Eisvei Rav Chama Bar Guri L'Shmuel. Rav Chama raises an objection from the following source. Hanoisei Behema L'Tabach V'Nibla. Person gave his animal to a slaughterer, and nibla from the word nevela, and he ruined the slaughtering. Uman poter hedyo chayov. If he's a professional, he'll be exempt, because what must have happened was something beyond his control. He's a professional otherwise. If he's a commoner, so he shouldn't. He's a non-professional, so he's obligated to compensate. He shouldn't have offered his services in the first place. V'im noisein schar, if payment is being made, bein hedyot, bein uman chayav. Whether you're dealing with an unprofessional or even a professional, he has to compensate for the damage. So what do we see from here? We see that if the uman is not being paid, he's potter. That would indicate contrary to Shmuel. Shmuel said that the Uman mess up is viewed as an act of negligence, which would not exempt even if the person was doing it gratis. Omar lay. So Shmuel responds to Rav Chama and he says, "Le'aker moichacha." Literal translation of that is along the lines of your brain is murky or muddy. The Shita Mekubetzes quotes the opinion or the explanation of the Gaon, and not to be confused, by the way, with the Vilna Gaon, because the Shita Mekubetzes preceded the Vilna Gaon by a good few years, but the Gaon, nevertheless, that's quoted in the Shita Mekubetzes, says, "Klomar ein lo moach bekodkodo." You don't have a brain within your skull. So Shmuel is taken aback by Rav Chama's question. What is bothering Shmuel through Rav Acha's question? We'll wait and see. We continue in the Gemara. Asa ha'u mi'rabbanan k'moisiv leib. Some other scholar came along and raised the same objection from this source where you see that the Uman, if it's if he's not being paid, he's actually exempt, which would be a kash on Shmuel. Omar lay, Shmuel hears the same question again and he says, "Hashto shaklis mai deshoko chavroch." You're now going to take what your friend took. In other words, if I criticized him, you're going to take the same criticism. And Shmuel goes on to explain. We have a long answer marking here, so we continue with Shmuel. Kamina luchuano, Rabbi Meir. I said a ruling that would follow the ruling of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is stringent that even if the Uman is doing something for nothing, for free, he will be chayav. V'koamrisu li rabbonon. And you try to raise an objection to me from a source that represents a different opinion, the opinion of the rabbonon. They exempt if the process was being done for nothing. Amai lodaikis mili. Why were you not precise? Shani Omer, I said, when I spoke, you should have realized that I was reflecting Rabbi Meir. What did I say? Shani Omer, maziku posheahu, nase ka'omer lo shchot li mikan v'shochad lo mikan. I described him as a damager, as one who is negligent, and it's like there was instructions given to do one way, and he did another way. Man yisleh hai svara, who holds like that the individual who's given instructions and doesn't behave accordingly is guilty. Who holds from that? Rabbi Meir. That is characteristic of Rabbi Meir di Omar. Miboya le lemir mi'anafshe. He should have paid attention. And he should have paid attention, and from the fact that he didn't pay attention, he is considered a poshea. He's considered as having acted out of negligence. So my initial comment was reflective of Rebbe Meir. Now the Gemara asks, "Hey, Rebbe Meir, where do we see Rebbe Meir saying thusly?" The phrase is of critical importance. Miboyale lemir mi anafshe. He should have been more careful, more diligent. Literally, he should have paid closer attention. That phrase we've dashed underlined because we're now going to seek out where do we see Rabbi Meir holding thusly, that's a claim. In order to find Rabbi Meir, you'll notice we're going to go through several stages that are introduced with a diamond marking. And on the side of the Gemara, we have under the structural note, we indicate where a diamond is featured. Chipus achar amokur, seeking out a source, shebo Rabbi Meir, within which Rabbi Meir says, mechayev uman sheposha, that a craftsman, a professional, that was negligent must compensate. And he can't exempt himself by the claim that, well, I was doing it for no pay, I was doing it for nothing, therefore you can't hold me responsible. Not so, will say Rebbe Meir. So now we ask, hey, Rebbe Meir. Which Rebbe Meir? Which source has Rebbe Meir saying thusly? If you think it's in the following source, Koshre Bolav and Masera, Vinal Bafon of Karoi, the owner of an animal tied it up with its ropes and locked the door in front of it in a proper fashion, V'yotzev v'hizik, and the animal escaped and damaged, Bein Tam, Bein Muad, Chayav Divrei Rebbe Meir. Whether the animal is a tam, a docile type animal, or it's a muad, an animal that's already shown its proclivity for damaging, the owner must compensate for damages. So here you have someone that the owner seemed to have taken special precautions, and yet he's held responsible. The Gemara says, Hasam Bekroi Pligi. Regarding that topic of the necessary level of guarding of an animal is a disagreement between Rebbe Meir and the Chachamim based on Psukim. So we can't use that as a precedent for Rebbe Meir's, we'll say, general stringency as Shmuel presents him. Just to repeat that last point, since the topic of animal guarding, where Rebbe Meir and the Chachamim have a disagreement, is governed by scriptural analysis, it doesn't serve for us as a precedent for other cases. Elo ha Rebbe Meir, disnan. A person approaches a dyer, someone who dyes clothing. He hired him to dye it in red, and the professional dyed it black, or the other way around. You hired him to do it shachar v'tzavoy adam, and he did it in red. Rebbe Meir Omer, no saint lo demeit simro. The professional has to compensate by paying the customer the value of the wool. So we see that there is an obligation to compensate on the part of someone who doesn't pay attention and doesn't follow the instructions that he was given. The Gemara says that that's not a source for the Rebbe Meir we're seeking out. Hasam biyodayim koloi minei. There he proactively, intentionally ruined it. Kolo literally means he burnt it, but he ruined it. So that's not similar to the din that we're looking for. Rashi uses the expression in the case of the dyer as niskavin lishanos. He intentionally did differently than he was asked to do. That's considered as if he proactively ruined it. That's different than the case of the tabuch uman shekilko. There, he didn't deliberately ruin the shechita. There, the animal made some type of abrupt motion, ruining the required smooth slaughtering. Elo ha Rebbe Meir, the snan. Rebbe Nishbro Kado Velo Silko. A person was carrying a jug and it slipped off his shoulder and it fell on the ground and he left it there. He didn't remove it. Nafla Gomloi Velo Hemida. Or an animal, an owner of a camel, had his camel fell and he left it there. He didn't stand it up. Rebbe Meir Omer Chayav Benizkan. Rebbe Meir says that the owner of these items will be obligated to compensate for any damage that results through them. People who trip over the smashed jug, or people who trip over the camel lying on the ground. Chacham say that is in terms of mortal courts, Dine Adam, earthly courts, there is exemption. The owner won't have to compensate for damages that result, but in heaven they hold you responsible. V'kaimalon de beniskal poshehu pligi, and the understanding of this disagreement between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim surrounds the issue of how do we look at someone who trips. In the case featured above, the owner of the items, the jug or the camel, tripped, and that is what resulted in the falling. Is that considered poshe? Is that considered a form of negligence? Rabbi Meir is saying yes, and we say you should have watched where you're going, and that's what we had dashed underline a number of lines above. Miboyele lemir me'anafshi. You should have been more attentive, more diligent, and with not being so, Rabbi Meir says you have to pay. And that is what Shmuel said originally regarding the Tabachum and Shekilkel. He has to pay. And we said that Shmuel reflected the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Omar Rabo Bar Bar Chana Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Tabach Umon Shekilkel Chayov. Notice that this is very similar to the Din of Shmuel, but only at the beginning. You will see later that what Rabbi Yochanan says is there's a difference in so far as Shmuel above reflected the opinion of Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Yochanan's ruling here, you will see, follows what would most likely be the opinion of the Rabbonon, as Shmuel had said earlier. So Rabbi Yochanan says a tabach uman shekilkel is chayav afilu hu uman ketabochid tzibori. Even if he's like the expert slaughterers of tzipor. Tzipor was the name of a place where apparently there were highly talented, highly expert slaughterers. Umi Amar Rabbi Yochanan hachi. Would Rabbi Yochanan have really said thusly that an uman is chayav, that a professional who messes up has to compensate? Omer Rabba Bar Chana Uvda Hava Kameid Rabbi Yochanan. Rabba Bar Chana himself tells us there was an incident that came in front of Rabbi Yochanan. Beknishta de Moin, that's the name of a place. The Omar lay and he said Zil Aisi Raya de Mamchis Latarnegolim Vafterach. Bring proof that you're an expert Mamchis from the Loshen Mumche, an expert with regard to slaughtering birds. And I will exempt you from compensating for the messed up shechita that you did. So what do we see? Note the dashed underlining. Two lines above, we saw uman chayav. Here we have the case of a mumche, and like I said, uman, a professional. That's potter. Lo kashya. There's no inconsistency with regard to Rabbi Yochanan's rulings. Kan b'chinom, kan b'schar. Rabbi Yochanan said there will be exemption if he was functioning, he was an expert that was functioning gratis. He was doing it for nothing. But if you were getting paid, then you will have to compensate. Now, this point of exemption in the event that you're not getting paid is similar to what we had seen earlier when Shmuel presented the opinions of Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. We had seen a Tanaic source above where on the second wide line of the Gemara where an animal was given to a taboch and he made it into a nevela, he ruined the shechita. If he was a professional, he would be exempt. And regarding that, Rabbi Shmuel had said before, that is in accordance with the Rabbanon, who say that if a professional messes up and he was not getting paid, he would be exempt for the mess up. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan here is reflecting. Kan Bishar, that which Rabbi Yochanan said, that the uman that messes up is chayev, will have to compensate because he was getting paid for the job. Kiha the Omer Rabbi Zera, similar to that which Rabbi Zera says, Haroitza she is chayev lo taboch, a person that wants to insure himself for compensation in the event that there's a mess up. So he wants the tabuch, the slaughterer, to be obligated to compensate. How do you get it to be that way? That the tabuch will be mechuyev, will be obligated to compensate. Yaktim lo dinar. Pay him initially a coin. Notice we've dashed underline yischayev and the word dinar. That is the highlight of this point of Rabbi Zera, that there will be chiyuv, there will be obligation on the part of the slaughterer to compensate if he received pay and nevertheless messed up. Meisvei, we have a question from the following Tanaic source, Hamoylich, Chitim Litchein Velo Losasan Velasan Subin Omursan. Someone brought his wheat grains to be ground into flour, and they were not, Losasan means soaked. The grains were not soaked, and as a result, the shell of the kernel, of the wheat kernel, doesn't separate from the kernel itself, and the flour that results in such a case is a poor quality flour referred to as subin or mursan, different expressions reflecting poor quality flour. Another situation, kemach lenachtei vasoi pas nepoilin. Someone brought flour to a baker to fashion into nice loaves, and the loaves fell in. They were not nice looking loaves. Behemal tabach v'nibla, and an example that's more familiar to us in the last few lines. An animal is brought to a slaughterer and he messed up in the slaughtering. Nibla means he resulted in becoming a nevela. That's a case of an animal that's improperly slaughtered is a nevela. Chayov mipnei shuhu kenoise schar. Hired people, the people here that messed up, are obligated to compensate because they are viewed like those that received a wage or payment. Now we emphasize the chof, kit, no se sahar, like someone being paid. In reality, though, even if they were not paid. So even if done for nothing, even if done gratis, they would be chayav. That's a kashan Rabbi Yochanan. That's a difficulty for Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara says, Eimo b'nei shuhu no se sochar. Notice the change, not kit no se with the chof, no chof, but rather the obligation to compensate in these examples is because they received pay. Before we go further, we have a no se a topic heading on the side. Behemo shenishchata b'hagromo. An animal that was slaughtered where the knife cut above the proper spot for shechita. That's hagroma. V'rav posak trefa, and Rav ruled that the animal is a trefa, means it's you can't eat it because the slaughtering was done above the required location. And point number two, hadhabach poter, the slaughterer will be exempt. So now the Gemara. Hahu magrumta, we explained, was shechting outside the required area. The Rashi describes this in greater detail. Let's look at Rashi together, a few lines up from here in the Rashi commentary. Magrumta, shochat mitoch achas ataboys. Tabos is a reference to the appearance of a ring-like tissue, cartilage, that surrounds the trachea, which is one of the organs that needs to be slaughtered. 51% of it must be cut open. So you slaughtered within the tabos, the higrim chutz, bein tabas l'tabas, and you veered your knife, the knife tilted, ended up cutting between the rings. You're supposed to cut within the ring itself, the ring, the cartilage-like ring-looking material around the trachea, and your knife veered out of place. V'shir melo achut al pnei ruba. The majority of the ring was cut. Vashir maloha chut al pnei ruva. As we said, the majority was cut, but then at the end he veered out. Rav Yossi, Rav Yudas machshir le v'mloa chud al pnei ruva. Rav Yossi, Rav Yudas says it's a kosher shechita. Rabbanan bo al pnei kula, the hakol shochtin in maseches chulin. The Rabbanan require for it to be kosher shechita, the knife should remain within the ring the entire time, not veer outwards. So, we continue in our Gemara. The case of Magrumta, an animal slaughtered in that fashion, where the knife veered out of the proper place of Shechita, came in front of Rav. Tarfe upatri letabach milishlume domi. Rav issued two rulings. One is that it's not, you can't eat it, trefa. And two, the tabach that ruined the Shechita is exempt from compensating. Pogube Rav Kana Ravasi Bahu Gavro. Rav Kana and Ravasi met that man, the owner of the animal. Now, the owner of the animal now has an animal that was ruled to be trefa, and he also is a person that doesn't receive compensation for the mess up. So Rav Kana Ravasi met this man, Omrule Ovid Boch Rav Tarti. Rav did for you, he ruled two. Tarti means two. My Tarti. What do you mean? Two rulings. The triangles that you see highlight the stages of analysis. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Mivneh. Shlovin Levayer, Maya, Kavanosim, Shavkan Ravasi, Boimron, Ovat, Boch, Rav, Tarti. What was Rav's intent when he said that? So now we continue in the Gemara. E Lema, Tarti, Legreusa. If you think it means he made two wrong or negative rulings, two mistakes. The boya lay lachshuk Rav Yosi b'Yehuda v'torfeg Rabbanan, that Rav should have ruled that the animal is kosher, like Rav Yosi b'Yehuda holds that even though you're near the slaughtering knife veered out of place at the end of the shechita, that doesn't matter. It's still kosher, like Rav Yosi b'Yehuda. Even though he should have ruled that way, he ruled incorrectly, like the Rabbanan declaring it a trefa. V'inami k'Rabbanan, even if you say that the rule follows the Rabbanan that it is a trefa, because your knife didn't continue in the proper area of shechita the whole time, nevertheless, diboylei l'chivei l'tabcha. Rav should have obligated the tabach to compensate you, not to exempt him. So, is that what Rav Kana and Vasi are trying to inform the owner of the animal, that Rav messed up on two counts? The Gemara says no. Umishori lemeimar ki hai gavna. Would it be allowed on the part of Rav Kana and Vasi to behave thusly, to speak out, to reveal the mistakes thusly? V'atanya, we have the following sources. L'chashiyetze lo yomar, ani mezake v'chaveray mechayvin. Avomar says, shechaveray rovu alai. A judge that comes out of a court session, there are three judges in a standard court session, should not, upon departure, say, listen, I wanted to exempt you, but my colleagues found you guilty. And what can I do? They were the majority. And regarding a scenario like that, we have the pasuk that is a condemnatory. Holech rachim megal esod means the tale bearer goes along revealing secrets. So that it would be very uncharacteristic of Rav Kahana and Ravasi to have said Tarti Lugreusa as a criticisms of Rav's ruling. Ela Tarti Lemayusa. Rather, when Rav Kahana Ravasi declared the owner of the animal, Rav did for you two things, he did two positive things. Delo Oichoch Sofek Isura, by ruling it as a trefa, He prevented you from eating something that that is a doubtful iser, doubtful prohibition. Namely, if we would rule like Rabbi Yossi ben Yehuda, then it would be kosher. But if you would hold like the Rabbanan, it would be treifa. So Rav, by saying it's a treifa, prevented you, covered your ground, that you didn't violate what might be a prohibition. Umonach misafik zelin. He also prevented you, restrained you from benefiting from that which might be stolen. In other words, if the animal that was slaughtered was kosher, then the tabuch would not have had to pay. The tabuch did a proper slaughtering. And to receive money from the tabuch that you don't deserve to receive, on the side that the tabuch didn't mess up, you're holding money, you're claiming money from him, would be tantamount to a form of theft. You're holding money that you'd be receiving money that you don't deserve to have. So Rav, by ruling what he did, that he ruled that it's a treifa and exempted the uman for compensating, saved the owner of the animal from two problems, safek iser and from safek gezela. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, which reads, Shulchani Shira Diner Upasak the Kosher Hu, a money exchanger who is assumed to be a professional concerning coins. He was presented a dinar for analysis, and he ruled that this dinar, this coin, is a kosher, it's an acceptable currency. And then it turned out that the Shulchani made a mistake. Well, in the interim, the customer that presented the Shulchani with the coin for his judgment on it, is this still a current coin? The customer took that coin the customer actually had come to inquire, should I accept this coin as a means of payment for whatever? And the Shulchani says, yeah, you should accept it. And it turned out to be discontinued or a disqualified coin, and hence the customer ends up losing out, having accepted a coin that was really worthless. So that's a case of a Shulchani that messes up. Now the Gemara. Itmar Hamara Dinar L'Shulchani V'Nimtza Ra. Person who needed to receive payment, he showed the coin that would be his payment, he showed it to a Shulchani, to a money exchanger, and the money exchanger said, it's good, you can accept it, and he did, and then it turned out, V'nim Tzorah, it turned out to be a bad coin, meaning a coin that was discontinued, is no longer acceptable. So we have the customer, the merchant who accepted the coin as payment, now is left with nothing, and it was all on the word of this Shulchani. Tani chada uman poter hedyot chayav, v'tani idach bein uman bein hedyot chayav. One source tells us that if the Shulchani is a professional, so he is exempt, even though he mentioned he made a mistaken ruling, he'll be exempt. If he's a non-professional, he should have kept his mouth shut, and by causing this loss, he has to compensate. The Tanya, another source, says, Bein Uman Bein Hedyot Chayav, even if he's a professional, he'll have to compensate for the wrongful ruling. Omar Rav Papa, Kitanya Uman Potter. Rav Papa explains that the source that says Uman Potter, the first of these two Tanaic sources, Kagon Danko v'Isur. These are names of people. Danko and Isur are names. Delo Tzrichi L'migma Klal. They're highly professional. They don't have anything that they need to learn about coins. They're, you know, about all the coins. Elavamaito. So, in what did they make a mistake? If they're so expert, where was their mistake?
To'u b'sichso chadito.
They were unaware of a new minting. Sich Sochadati is a new minting of coins. And if we look at Rashi together, Tov b'sich Sochadati, Shenifsal ha-matbea, v'midu tzura acheres, v'adayin lo'i b'kiyim ba. There was a particular coin that was acceptable till now. Now being the time that a new minting was made of a new coin, and the old coin was discontinued, was declared void. He, the Danku and Iser, were unaware of the new minting, which represents the disqualification of this of a particular coin. Being that they were unaware of the new minting, they ruled that the coin that was presented as the merchant had accepted his payment, they're ruling that it's a good coin and therefore the merchant should accept it as payment, it turns out to be a mistaken ruling. But this is a kind of mistake that they could not have been aware of with such short notice. And therefore, we mentioned we say an Uman is potter, and the mistake that the Uman might make is something like this. Hayitza, there was a woman, the Achsia Dinra, the Rabbi Chia. There was a woman that presented a coin for his ruling, for Bichia's ruling. Achsia means she showed him a dinar, a particular dinar coin, a denomination of currency, and Rabbi Yechia Amar Lo Malyo Hu. Rabbi Yechia told the woman, "It's a good coin." And as we saw before, she accepted the coin from someone that owed her money. And Lemocher Asoy Lekamei VeOmra Le Achzise. The next day, she comes back to Rabbi Yechia with the coin, and he says to her, "Well, you showed it to me already." Let me read that again. Lemochar asoy lekamei fi omro le, and the woman says, "Achzisei fi omru li bishahu v'loko nafikli." I showed it to others, and they said it's no good, and now I can't spend it. So you told me to accept the coin, but others told me it's no good. So it's and no one's going to accept it. Omar le l'Rav, so Rav Chia tells his nephew Rav, the famous Rav of the Talmud, Zil chalfei nihalo uksov apinginsoi, go exchange it for her, take the coin, though I ruled that it was a good coin, take it from her and give her something in exchange. Exchange it for something good. Uksova pinkosi, and write in my ledger, Dein Esek Bish. Rashi says, Dein Esek Bish, Schoru Roi, this was a bad deal. Shal Iske Chinom Ani Mafsin, Shalohoyo Li Lurosa. Too bad for me that I'm losing out for nothing, meaning I shouldn't have looked at it in the first place. The Gemara asks, why does Rav Chia do all of this? Umay shno danku v'iser. What's unique about danku and iser, the names we mentioned before, as professional money changers? The patri, we say that if a mistake comes as a result of their ruling, they're exempt. Mishum delot tzrichi l'migmar, because they don't need to learn any more about coinage. They're familiar with all of the coins. And because of their high level of expertise, a mistake that results is one that would not result in their being obligated to compensate. So what's their uniqueness in that they're lot shrich from the Migmar? Well, Reb Chia nami lo lav le Migmar koboi. Reb Chia also was highly expert. He didn't have any more that he needed to learn. So the Gemara answers, Reb Chia lifnimishus adin hudavad. Reb Chia's behavior here was not in accordance with the letter of the law, but beyond the letter of the law. He didn't have to compensate the woman he was allowed to look at the coin to offer his ruling on it. And the fact that a mistake resulted was it by letter of the law not able to obligate Rabbi Chiya. He would be exempt. Rabbi Chiya compensated, as we saw, with Nin Mishwasadin. That's beyond the letter of the law. Kedetani Rav Yosef. In accordance with the teaching of Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef presents a pasuk from Sefer Shmos, Parshas Yisrael, and you'll see that the pasuk is broken up into several phrases. We've underlined the phrases. The pasuk itself reads, V'hodata lahem, and then if you look at Dav Kuf Amud Aleph, it goes on to say, as a derech yechu bo, as a maaser asher yasun. What did we just do? We read the underlinings. Now we break it up. We break the pasuk down into its phrases. V'hodata lahem. Zeh, we continue at the top of Dav Kuf, Beis Chayehem. Rashi at the top, Beis Chayehem Talmud Torah. There's another approach that's reflected in the commentary right to the side where there's a star, and you can look into that on your own. The Esaderech, the pasuk is where Yisro tells Moshe, "Valdatulem Esaderech Yehuba v'Samaser Shiasun." So he's telling him, "You teach them Torah Esaderech Zu Gemilas Chasadim." Acts of loving kindness, Yehu Zu Bikur Cholim, Ba Zu Kvura. Bikur Cholim is the visiting of the sick. Ba means to tend to the burial of the dead. Esamase Ze Hadin, that's a reflection of following the law. Asher Ya'asun Zu Lefnimishus Hadin. Notice we've dashed, underlined that. That's the main point. That's the reason we're bringing in the source, that there's a kind of sort of expectation that people are not rigid in their judgment, but know how to behave even beyond the letter of the law. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Mark Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.